next up is going to be Professor Fisher from Penn, who's going to talk about avoiding the expensive hernia failure.
All right, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. We've already heard about advanced techniques for achieving results in complex cases, including component separations for closing fascia and optimal placement of mesh. We're going to talk briefly about prevention of the costly hernia failure. These are my disclosures. So the easiest way is to not operate, I guess, but that wouldn't be any fun. So I think that, you know, thinking about how we can do better, I think, is really kind of going to be the theme of this talk. So I think it's important to note that complications don't necessarily equal failures. I think that the real failure is if we don't attempt to learn from our mistakes and do better. A lot of things we've already heard about, I think that choosing the wrong component separation for the wrong reason is probably a surgeon level failure. Picking the wrong patient and not trying to optimize the patient is probably a failure. The wrong approach, the wrong mesh, and the wrong context, and maybe the wrong time, I think, could all potentially be attributable failures that we could potentially avoid. So these are kind of some of the things that I want to consider as we talk about this topic. I think, again, the biggest failure would be not measuring our data, not measuring our performance, not having a scorecard for ourselves to know how we're doing. And again, I think that it's so important that we measure, because if we don't, we're not going to be able to improve the way we perform and the way we take care of these complex patients. There's really kind of no room for not measuring. So again, I think that the scope of this problem is quite significant. This is a paper from our group that really highlights how common incisional hernia is, and more importantly, how expensive it is and how expensive it has become. And we're really trying to do better because we know with failure, we have more failure. And again, you know, cost and morbidity keep going up and up, and the opportunity to impact the patient's quality of life goes down and down. So I think that as we kind of contemplate how we can really optimize success and minimize failure, we have to know what we're measuring. So we're looking at outcomes, we're looking at cost. I think most importantly, we have to understand the quality of life through patient-reported outcomes to really get a truly three-dimensional picture of how we're performing. We have to measure appropriately. So, interesting paper from Scott Ross' group that kind of characterizes cost and the various predictors of cost following surgery. This is an important dimension of our overall performance, and certainly contamination, defect size, number of mesh used, ASA status, and the use of biologic mesh were proportionally related to cost, but that's only one dimension. Our group has characterized some of the important health states following hernia treatment and their relative impact on patients. And as you can see here, a hernia with no repair versus a successful repair is going to have a much, much lower quality of life state. But importantly, the worst health state following a hernia repair is actually a wound infection requiring reoperation or a fistula. So those are important to think about as we contemplate our surgical approach and our perioperative decision making. I made this slide to kind of highlight what I think are the important things to consider. And the best case scenario for repair is going to be a good outcome with no complications, maximum quality of life improvement, and the lowest cost possible. That's probably never going to happen in complex hernia reconstruction. The worst is going to be lots of complications, minimal improvement in quality of life, and an extreme cost. Most of what we're going to talk about is going to be somewhere in between, in the gray. And I think that this is not an easy one. This gentleman came to my office with 7 failed repairs, a big defect. He ultimately had a contaminated wound because of his urostomy, and he has poor soft tissue. So here's his defect. Here's him intraoperatively. And this is him postoperatively. He has a recurrence, but I would actually argue this is a complete success. He had a small recurrence. We fixed it. Wasn't a problem. Massive improvement of quality of life. And certainly it was an expensive repair, but this has transformed his life. So even though there's complications, I would consider this a significant success. So we've already heard about some of the strategies to optimize reconstruction and to optimize outcomes. I think having some governing principles and being familiar with the data, I think, is really, really critical. So we've heard about closing the fascia and using advanced component separation techniques. If you can co-apt the fascia, there's going to be a much lower chance of postoperative hernia recurrence. And again, we know adding mesh to support the tissue long-term is going to be associated with a lower chance of recurrence. And again, I think this has been borne out in multiple high-level impact articles in the literature. And again, we've already seen this data, but you know, where you put the mesh is going to probably have an impact on the post-operative risk of surgical site infections and recurrence, highlighted in this article with over 6,000 patients in which retromuscular repairs had the lowest probability of post-operative recurrence and SSI. I think ultimately your choice of mesh in the context of patient health conditions, defect size, contamination, and soft tissue is going to have a major impact. And again, articles like this that highlight in high-risk patients undergoing concurrent procedures, the risk of postoperative mesh infection can be much higher. And this work from Dr. Augenstein and Dr. Henneford highlights how significant the impact of a mesh infection can be on postoperative patient complications and total healthcare expenditures. So very important to contemplate these things. Here's a patient who had a postoperative mesh infection that came to my office. And again, I think that reliable results can be achieved in these patients if some of these principles are taken into consideration. So I think we have to carefully define success. This patient comes to the office, not a terribly big hernia, bilateral TAR, preperitoneal mesh, primary fascial closure, good result. This patient, different story, on oxygen, partially functionally dependent, exposed subcutaneous mesh, massive overhanging pannus. She gets a BFL in my office, a binder for life. You know, not going to repair this patient. So I think another failure is not knowing who's at risk. And there's not really an excuse for that, frankly. I think we have lots and lots of tools at our disposal. So why try to figure out who's at risk? Because if you can identify the patient, you can potentially manage and modulate and then improve the outcome. So lots of different publications on this. This is a recent publication from the PRS, Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery Supplement from September, showing that there's a direct proportional relationship between SSI, SSO, and recurrence across a stratified instrument, the Ventral Hernia Outcomes Collaborative Risk Strata. And again, we have lots of tools, including the CEDAR app from Carolinas, and we also have the AHSQC, the Oracle, which is really a great kind of bedside tool that can allow us to stratify our patients and communicate risk information to each of our patients and try to really inform them of their postoperative risks. So I think that all this really kind of sets the stage for the need for some preoperative optimization. And this is probably a full talk in and of itself, so I'm going to kind of keep this very high level. I think that preoperative optimization helps us to avoid the probability of a postoperative failure, and it's really the right thing to do. And I think that all of this work that we're doing needs to probably be shifted from the OR intraoperatively to preoperative, including smoking cessation, weight loss, glycemic control, and informed consent with our patients. And again, I think there's great data out there. This is just one article that highlights how preoperative smoking cessation and nicotine replacement can reduce basically to zero the chance of postoperative infections in surgical patients, a randomized controlled trial from the Annals of Surgery by Sorensen. Again, an article from our group that highlights a proportional relationship between BMI and postoperative complications. So if you're operating on patients in the 40s and 50s, there's going to be a much higher chance of postoperative complications. So in my office, just like in others' offices, everyone should lose some weight. And again, this patient has a large hernia and a large pannus. Again, I think that this patient is currently unacceptable for surgery, but with some weight loss, he became a very good candidate. His BMI was 53, 394 pounds, came back to the office, still morbidly obese, but he lost 74 pounds for me. So weight loss, informed consent, and again, a preoperative strategy, and again, a good result in this patient. Again, there's great data on prehabilitation. This is a recent article, a randomized control trial from Annals of Surgery, highlighting that prehabilitation actually leads to a lower incidence of postoperative hernia complications in the randomized cohort to prehabilitation. This includes an interdisciplinary approach, including nutrition, a hernia navigator, daily goals, and a support system. So really, really good data on the horizon for this. I think that the last thing I'll touch upon quickly here is that a failure to recognize the importance of prevention has kind of led us to kind of where we are. And I think we're overly focused on advanced and complicated treatments by necessity. But I think that recognizing the opportunity to fix these hernias the right way, the smaller umbilical hernias, is a randomized control trial in The Lancet by Ruth Kaufman showing that adding mesh to smaller umbilical hernias has a statistically significant reduction in the incidence of postoperative recurrence with a number needed to treat of just 12. And again, other data from our group showing that adding mesh to support tissue closure after laparotomy reduces the chance of postoperative hernia occurrence. And again, following this recently published article in The Lancet demonstrating that adding MASH to closures actually is statistically significantly associated with reduction in postoperative hernia occurrence. So preventing these hernias before they happen, they found that there was a reduction from 30% in the primary suture group to 18% with retromuscular sublay and to 13% with onlay at 2 years. And this is a prospective randomized controlled trial, and the authors concluded that prophylactic MASH in patients with AAA and high BMI significantly reduced the incidence of incisional hernia, and that onlay MESH was a less complex surgical technique. So I think that to avoid failure, an ounce of prevention, whether it is an ounce of prevention in the office for the hernia patient or the consideration of doing something different with laparotomy repairs, I think is going to be critically important. So to kind of wrap this up, complications don't equal failure. There's an opportunity to do better. But I think that not knowing the data, not measuring outcomes, or constantly trying to improve is a failure. So I think the way we succeed here is to really kind of consider all the different dimensions that we can measure how we're performing, outcomes, patient-reported outcomes, and cost, and really kind of try to really optimize each of those. I think it's important to stratify all the patients. That gives you the opportunity to identify who's at risk, why they're at risk, do something different, and potentially improve outcomes. And preoperative optimization, whether it's for the hernia patient or to prevent a hernia from occurring, I think will pay dividends. And again, prevention is truly the only way to avoid a treatment failure. Thank you.